again, Medical Education Podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal, coming to you from a blissful summer day in Vancouver with a good streak of high 20-degree temperatures. Today, it seems fitting that I'm going to be speaking with a colleague from Ottawa, which, as many of you will know, is our capital city here in Canada, in part because we've just had fairly major 150th birthday celebrations for the country just a few days ago. The colleague I'm alluding to is Christopher Ramnanan, who's associate professor as of only a month ago. So congratulations, first of all, on your promotion within the Department of Innovation and Medical Education at the University of Ottawa.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin, and I'd like to echo happy belated Canada Day to everybody, and as well, happy 4th of July. Belatedly as well, but my wife is American, and she always makes it a point to remind me that our daughter is half American, so it's probably good to congratulate all the Americans out there on a wonderful 4th of July as well.
Absolutely, but the reason we got together today, as you know, is to talk about a paper that you have coming out in the September issue of Medical Education called Comparing Alternative and Traditional Dissemination Metrics in Medical Education. It's a fairly unique paper relative to the ones that we typically receive, in that it is really focusing much more on medical education as a field and the impact that we're having, and whether or not the more typical research that we're doing is being taken up and used by people. What was it that got you interested in the topic?
Well, I recently, as you alluded to, went through the promotion and tenure process, and a big part of that is you're being assessed on the quality of your work, the impact of your work. So over the last couple of years, I've been looking at the literature, and there's been a lot of interest in reevaluating how we measure impact. In this day and age, the day and age of online media, Twitter, Facebook, there are a lot of people that talk about their work, disseminate their work through those means. And there's also the traditional methods. When I was in basic science, where I did my PhD, everybody wanted to publish in Nature and Science and the Journal of Clinical Investigation, the high impact journals with high impact factors, which essentially means the average article in those journals are highly cited. But as I was preparing my documents over the last year or two, I realized that there's some debate or maybe some alternative views with regards to what impact means. For example, and it's true, the journal impact factor, it's sort of a journal level metric. So in our field, in medical education, in the health professions education field, the high impact journals, medical education and probably academic medicine, everybody wants to publish in those journals because you assume by publishing in those journals, you're highly visible, you're going to be highly read, and many other your colleagues are going to cite your work down the road. But there's been some debate, especially on social media platforms, that maybe you can't really look too far into journal impact factor for the articles that you publish, because it truly is a journal level metric. You could publish an article in one of those journals and it could be cited at a much higher rate than the average, or it could be not cited at all. So there is truth in that. And a lot of these individuals that suggest that you should look at citation-based indices with some caution also suggest you should look at the new platform as well. There are a lot of avid users of Facebook and Twitter, and perhaps we should take that into account, like the paper is popular on these platforms, and that could be indicative of general interest or interest in the academic field as well. So it really started when I was putting together my documents and document my scholarship. I had to sort of argue and prove and sell that my scholarship was impactful, and I had to sort of account for not only traditional impact, but to look at what impact might mean in this day and age as well.
It's actually always been strangely comforting for me to be able to criticize things like impact factor from the perspective of somebody who's working at a journal that does fairly well by that metric. And so I think it's absolutely fair to say that there are a number of weirdnesses to impact factor and some of the other metrics that are more commonly recognized. And as you said, people are often misled by thinking that it's better to submit to a high impact journal than it is to submit to a journal that will best capture the audience that they're trying to reach with that particular piece of work. I always think of it as analogous to our assessment practices, that no one measure is perfect, but hopefully all the ones that are used add a bit more information, and collectively they provide some sense as to how one is performing or how an individual article is performing. Given that, though, and given the robustness and extent to which people are readily familiar with the more traditional metrics, what are some of the things that are on the horizon that you see coming that might start fleshing out that bigger picture?
Well, I definitely think with regards to traditional metrics, the paper actually looks at and sort of shows that in our field, traditional metrics are still rock solid. Like, if you want to have an index of how many people are looking or reading or accessing your article, the strongest numbers are still related to citations. If your paper is going to be highly cited or is highly cited, it's very likely it's going to be highly accessed. So I do think what we're moving towards is probably just transparency. Some journals do it, and some alternative third-party websites like ResearchGate do it. It actually not only provides citations to a given article, it also shows how many times that paper was accessed. And you'll see that the papers that are timely and of interest and impactful, or talking about topics that are really flagship topics of the day, those are not only going to be highly cited, but they'll be highly accessed as well. So it does seem to be that journals and authors, we all care about this information. And in medical education, it's one of the high impact journals in the field, and everybody wants to publish there. But this journal and many others, they're starting to put the Altmetric logo on the homepage. And if you want to see how popular that article is on a given platform, you just click on the little Altmetric badge and all that information is available. The citation data, usually you have to go to another source like Scopus or Google Scholar to really gain that type of insight. But I foresee that at some point, why not provide all the information in one place? And the journal's website is probably the best place to do that.
Yeah, well, and I would draw listeners' attention to the fact that depending on where you get those data, your citations being the easiest one to talk about, there are different algorithms that are used for some of those things too. So if you find yourself in a position of having to make a comparison of any kind, you want to be careful that you're comparing citation counts within Google Scholar or within Web of Science or Scopus rather than looking across them necessarily.
Oh yeah, apples to apples. Like you mentioned, I think Scopus is a little bit more discriminating. Citations that go into the Scopus count are articles citing a given paper, where I think you'd agree, I think Google's less discriminating. Your paper could be cited on a slide and they would count that as a citation. And there are pros to that and caveats to that as well.
Well, so that's actually the next bit I'd value some conversation with you about, is sort of what is the different information that might be available and the different metrics that you've been using. But before I think I can ask you to sensibly speak to that, I probably need to ask you to tell our listeners a little bit more about what you did to collect the data and what led to the results that I hope you'll share with us momentarily.
Well, because in this day and age, there are many ways to disseminate a paper on many different platforms, we wanted to look at which of these metrics, which of these platforms are the best indicators for how often a paper is cited, which is traditionally the index used when you think about scholarly impact, as well as which of the modern day platforms in numbers, indices, which of these best correlate with interest, general interest. And a good way to look at general interest is just how many times a paper is accessed, downloaded as a PDF, or viewed on a web page, HTML. So with regards to where we got the information, Scopus, like I said, it's one of the more conventional sources for citation data. It's not the only one, like you mentioned, but Scopus, for example, locally here, when I was going for tenure and promotion, when we're talking about counting citations to my work, Scopus was the one that was most esteemed locally. And I think at a lot of institutions, everybody in academia, they have an idea what Scopus is. It's a very trusted resource when collecting citation data, and that's open access and freely accessible information to collect, and that's where we got our Scopus data. When it came to the Altmetric data, we actually went to a website called altmetric.com, so capital A. This altmetric.com website tracks the data associated with the online attention, views, downloads, clicks through all different platforms such as Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, bibliography platforms like Mendeley. And not only does altmetric.com collect the granular data platform by platform, it also takes all the information across all the different platforms and puts it together and provides a composite score called the Altmetric score. And even though you can't really calculate the altmetric score for yourself, they don't provide the algorithm. It's not that transparent. What it does, though, it does provide a catch-all number. And this catch-all number is actually provided in badge. So when you look at an article online, such as at the medical education website, you can see the altmetric score badge with a number. The bigger the number, the larger of an audience that that paper captured via all these online platforms. And when it comes to the papers, we decided to look at medical education because it's a high-impact journal. It's a very visible, esteemed journal in our field. And we looked at papers published in 2012 and 2013 because not only did that occur within the time frame where social media was widely available and being used by many, many people. So things like Twitter and Facebook, we all know what those were in 2012, and papers were being mentioned on especially Twitter in 2012. But by looking at 2012 and 2013, we also gave those papers an ability to gain traction in terms of citations. It takes time for a paper to be cited. So if you were going to look at a paper and build from it, you'd have to publish that paper itself for that citation to count, right? So I think that 2012-2013 time period was a nice sweet spot. It occurred both in the time frame where talking about papers on social media was a common thing to do, and it also gave those papers a chance to collect citation counts.
And having done that and looking at the correlation between those different metrics, do you now feel like the altmetric type scores are early indicators of what the citation count will become, or do you think they're really different audiences that are being measured depending on how you choose to go about tracking the influence of a paper?
For a few papers, it was an accurate predictor of eventual impact and eventual readership. But for most papers, it might have been indicating something else entirely. So it's interesting, when we looked at papers in this journal and in this field, it looks like the altmetric score isn't really a nice blanket composite altmetric number. It's really a Twitter score. As it turns out, of all the platforms used these days, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and many others, only Twitter really captures mentions of academic articles. Maybe we tend to use Facebook for something else, keeping in touch with family members and seeing pictures of cousins and kids, right? It really seems that Twitter is the only platform being used. So the first thing to note is that the altmetric score really is a Twitter score. If a paper is highly mentioned on Twitter, it's going to have a high altmetric score. But the truth is that maybe the papers that have high altmetric scores, you can't really tell if that paper is really impactful, meaningful, going to be highly accessed or highly cited. It might just mean that that paper is just popular with the academic audience on Twitter. So let's say if people on Twitter like retweeting and discussing the use of social media or professionalism or certain topics on Twitter, they're going to be retweeting only academic articles that focus on those topics. That's not to say that, for example, I'm an anatomy professor. I publish stuff with anatomy education. If my stuff isn't highly visible on Twitter, that doesn't necessarily mean it wasn't an interesting paper or not impactful. It just means that maybe anatomy education isn't the biggest thing for those people using that platform.
Well, and so let me use that idea or those findings to bring us full circle. And you mentioned that you had interest in this because of pending promotion review and wanted to determine how to put the best case forward. Having actually explored these metrics in more detail than most people have, what do you recommend the individual academics who might be listening to this do with respect to putting forward the best case for the impact that their work is having when it comes time to do that for one reason or another?
Well, I think something that was recommended to me by a couple of colleagues that went through the process and I talked to them about these new metrics, they actually told me, instead of just going through your CV, just listing them, Article 1, 2, 3, 40, 45, if there's something interesting about an article, put a little note beneath that article on your list. Like if it was featured as one of the featured articles in medical education or an editor's pick, or if it was discussed on a journal club, or if it was highly mentioned on Twitter, be transparent and put that information there and let the people judging your work have as much information as possible. I didn't necessarily do that for every article because a CV could be tedious to look through. But for select articles, I definitely put a little note beneath the listed article to state if that was cited so many times within a year or if that article was the basis of an invitation to speak at a conference. With regards to these different metrics, I felt it was best to be transparent and provide the information for citations, for general altmetric score, and as an individual, there are some numbers that could sort of capture how productive you are and how many people are citing your work. The H index, let's say if you have published 20 papers, at least 20 papers that have been cited each individually at least 20 times, you as an author have an H index of 20. Now, that's definitely a flawed metric. There are caveats with that metric, but I actually put that in my CV as well. Just to give anybody reading my CV, in terms of judging me for promotion and tenure, the idea that, okay, I am publishing at a certain rate, and these many articles that I've published have been cited these many times, because that information could be important, right? You just want to provide as much information as possible. And you're selling yourself, too. If the number was a number you're proud of, you may as well put the number in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's good advice. So you're not going to be able to use these numbers to sell work that's poor quality or that isn't being taken up. And as you said, at least here in our country, more and more institutions are allowing, if not outright requesting, a better indication of the context within which the individual academic is working and some indication as to how they should interpret the information on the CV rather than simply counting the number of publications, which has been a problem for many places for far too long.
Right, and context is important. For example, if you provide a few different metrics for a paper that you're proud of, hopefully all those metrics point in the same direction. But there are articles, and in our study, we found articles that were highly mentioned on Twitter and therefore had a high altmetric score, but weren't really highly read or accessed or highly cited. So really, by being transparent, you're really putting all the information out there. It's best not to hide the information. If a paper is highly accessed and highly cited and has a high altmetric score, well, that's all great. And you could put that forward, and anybody looking at that information can say, well, this paper from this author was clearly impactful. It looks to be highly cited. A lot of people wanted to read it in this field. It had a high access count. And it looks like this individual paper was pretty popular on Twitter as well. I think it's interesting. You can't just assume that if a paper is very visible on Twitter, that individual paper is going to be highly read or highly cited. That's something that I kind of felt was a possible finding to come about, because really, in our field, not everybody is on Twitter. Not everybody who is prolific, not every paper that is impactful on the hot topics of today, like competency-based medical education, not every paper actually has an author on Twitter. And if that paper doesn't have authors on Twitter, it's less likely that that paper is going to be discussed on Twitter, because in many cases, a lot of the tweets were initially generated by the authors themselves.
That's very helpful advice, and I think probably a good note to end on, because it does reflect the diversity of our field and the fact that different people are going to approach their scholarship in different ways, and the more we can better understand these variety of metrics and options and find the right outlets and marketing strategies for individual papers and the individual authors, the better off we'll be. So I'm going to direct our listeners back to the paper if they want more details. It is a very interesting read, and hadn't really anticipated it, but as Chris said, perhaps particularly valuable to those who are coming up on a promotion review or a big grant proposal or something where they do have to sell themselves to external readers who maybe don't automatically know the work they've been doing. So you'll find the details in the September 2017 issue of Medical Education. The paper is called Comparing Alternative and Traditional Dissemination Metrics in Medical Education. And I've been speaking with the lead author on that work, Christopher Ramnanon, from the University of Ottawa. Thanks, Chris, for your insights and your time, and congratulations once again on your promotion.
Well, thank you again, Kevin, for this opportunity, and thanks for the congratulations there. It's been a good year.
Yeah, no doubt.